SBS Radio.
A long-time dream made reality. In Germany, Syrian-born swimmer Alaa Maso couldn't contain his joy on the Zoom call, officially announcing the 29 members of the second-ever refugee Olympic team.
That was the big dream actually being achieved. And the moment when I heard my name, I had a couple of moments of shock. Like, it is my name, right? It is...
Pumping his fists in the air in exuberance, his audio was muted as IOC President Thomas Bach made the announcement.
It's a message to the entire world to make the world aware of the magnitude of this crisis, which is growing every day. And it's also a message that these forcibly displaced people are an enrichment to all our societies, and that we should embrace them like we do in the Olympic Games to show all our unity in all our diversity.
Fellow Syrian swimmer Yusra Mardini was also pleasantly surprised to join the refugee Olympic team again after being part of the inaugural team of the 2016 Rio Games. She says the flag-raising ceremony marked a turning point.
In the beginning, I was ashamed of being called a refugee. I was ashamed of, you know, the whole story and that, okay, I slept on the floor while I came here. And I realized that actually it's not about this little girl anymore. Yeah, it was the moment of entering the Olympic Stadium 2016 that made me realize it's not about me. It's about way, you know, it was almost 65 million displaced people around the world, and now it is 82. So this is sad. It's a very sad number to me, but this is what motivates me now and keeps me going, to be honest.
In Belgium, Afghanistan native Abdullah Siddiqui used his taekwondo training to cope with the loss of his biggest supporter, his mother, who died from the coronavirus.
What I think for me was finished at that moment. I say to myself, after my mom, she died, I say to myself, okay, now it's the start. Now I have to do for myself and my mother's dream. So I work for both of her dreams. Put everything in there and I see now the result.
In the UK, Cameroonian weightlifter Cyril Chachet II said the enormity of the task ahead of him is not lost on him.
Cameroon, for example, is 23 to 25 million people. And the displaced people around the world is about 82 million. So we will be representing about four times the size of Cameroon. So it's a big responsibility.
All four members are united in having their dream fulfilled of competing at the Games, something they never thought possible as stateless athletes. But the journey to get here has not been easy. Yusra Mardini said she was left with no options when she fled war-torn Syria in 2015 as a 17-year-old in a boat headed for the Greek island of Lesbos. 30 minutes into the 10-kilometre journey, the engine failed. The dinghy had been built to hold seven people, not the 20 who were on board, including Yusra's sister. Only three people knew how to swim. Yusra's older sister Sarah was the first to jump out of the boat to prevent it from sinking. She directed Yusra to stay in the boat, concerned for her ability to see without her glasses and a tendency to get dizzy. Miss Mardini says it was an unconscious decision to join her sister in the water, where they ended up swimming alongside the boat for 3 hours.
Yeah, to be honest, I didn't think about anything. I just saw, it's like, you know, when the baby sees their mom doing something and they just do it. I felt like the comfort that my sister is there. There were like at least 90% of the people on the boat, they didn't know how to swim. So I would be selfish if I would still be on the boat. I didn't think for 1 second about the glasses thing, but actually it's a very dangerous thing for me because since I was young, I always lost balance when I had so much pressure. So that's why she was really, really afraid. But then I just jumped and I said, okay, whatever my sister does, I'll do.
At about the same time, Alaa Maso was fleeing Syria with his brother. They survived the boat journey without mishap, but got separated soon afterwards, forcing Mr. Maso as a 15-year-old to walk across three continents alone before reconnecting with his sibling. He credits his survival to the English language skills he picked up playing video games and watching films like Lord of the Rings.
Staying in the country means only like you're either going to be bummed out or like you're going to be forcibly taken to one of the conflict sides. At the time where I got lost, they got a bit of help from some civilians in Croatia. I didn't get that help. I had to walk 26 kilometers with a very huge group of people being organized by the police there. And we had to cross 26 kilometers, I think, on foot with a group of 300 people.
Taekwondo athlete Abdullah Siddiqui also walked for many hours a day when he escaped Afghanistan in 2017, fearing for his life after threats from gangs due to his sporting ability.
I started from Iran, I started after Turkey, and then I came to Greece. It was sometimes with walking like 12 hours, sometimes with the boat in the water, sometimes like sleeping in the night in the jungles. We had a lot of problems. I had a big dream in my head, and then I just thinking about my dreams, and it doesn't matter for me how it rolls, how it's gone. I focus on my dreams and focus on my goal.
After competing in the Glasgow Commonwealth Games for Cameroon in 2014, weightlifter Cyril Chachet, at the age of 19, was homeless for 2 months in the UK and was about to end his life when he phoned an organisation for help, but was picked up by police and told he was about to be deported. He's thankful to have survived, but says he was in a very dark place with depression and credits joining a local weightlifting club in Birmingham on the advice of his GP to get into exercise for beginning to turn things around.
I would say I'm actually lucky to be alive, because at the point when I called the police, I was actually ready to, you know, to just jump down the cliff. But after that, I think I became a bit more resilient and a bit more hopeful. So I started looking at the positive things. The only thing that I actually took with me when I left the Commonwealth Game Village was my bag, my weightlifting shoe, and my belt. So somehow I'm still hopeful that I'm gonna, you know, still gonna train and compete. And so me getting back to the gym was, wow, it was, because weightlifting is a very addictive sport. We really, not just the act of lifting, but, you know, you meet a lot of people, you know, you socialize a lot. So it meant a lot to me at that point.
The experience with the GP also inspired him to become a mental health nurse, and he graduated in 2019 with first class honours.
Cameroon, for example, the average person in Cameroon, depression. In my local language, there's not even a word for depression, so it's not even a thing. And same thing here, even in the West, they always think that, oh, depression is for weak people, or nursing is for women, is not for men, and blah. Even when I actually got onto the course, someone told me, oh, why don't you go and study sports science? I was like, I don't want to be a sports scientist, I want to be a nurse. So why are you asking me to go and do sports science? I said, oh, you're a big guy, you know, you need to do sports. I said, but being a big guy doesn't make me a sports scientist.
Stateless athletes were initially allowed to participate in the Olympics through the category of the independent athlete. Western Sydney University Emeritus Professor David Rowe says there's a growing recognition in international sporting competitions to remove barriers of entry for stateless athletes.
The role of sport as a social, cultural and political entity is on the rise. You know, there has been a rearguard action against what is seen as the introduction of politics into sport. You could see the introduction of a refugee Olympian team as a direct insertion in some way of politics into the Olympics around the politics of human rights, inclusion, and across all areas of sport. For example, there's a homeless World Cup, again, in football. Football's, because it's the global game, has pioneered many of these initiatives.
The chef de mission of the Tokyo Olympics refugee team, Kenyan former marathon runner Tegla Larupe, says refugee resettlement is an issue that needs to be addressed. In an interview with the South China Morning Post, she called on Australia as the preferred host of the 2032 Olympic Games to end its policy of detaining asylum seekers onshore and offshore. Other former athletes have also added their voice to calls for Australia to consider refugee resettlement options, like New Zealand's offer to take in 150 refugees a year. Former Socceroos player Craig Foster and New Zealand heavyweight boxer Sonny Bill Williams travelled to Queenstown in New Zealand in May during a bilateral meeting between leaders Jacinda Ardern and Scott Morrison as part of a campaign to end Australia's detention of asylum seekers and refugees.
It's not just about refugee athletes, it's about refugees. And therefore the IOC and FIFA and FIBA and all of these major and Formula One, all of these global sports institutions have a broader responsibility to contribute to creating and helping shape a better world in future. The time when sport, purported to be able to, or that it was necessary for sport to stand aside from issues that it deemed to be political, is over. Today, athletes are saying that they and sport needs to do much more.
Professor Rose says the issue of stateless athletes seeking asylum is a very real issue that emerges as the spotlight is on refugee athletes.
That's why in authoritarian countries, their Olympic teams, sporting teams are kept, you know, very tightly under wraps to stop them making an asylum claim. And in many cases, if there is a suspicion that they are refused entry into the nation, the host nation itself. And I think that makes it clear again the role of the nation here, that nations patrol their own boundaries. Now, the IOC is not a nation. It's a supranational body that, in some ways is richer and more influential than many actual nations. So it does have clout, it does have power. So it has a responsibility to support and help refugee athletes to thrive.
For Mr. Marceau, Ms. Mardini, Mr. Siddiqui and Mr. Chachet, the goal is to redefine how refugees are viewed.
Plans shouldn't be called dreams. That was my motto always. Like, if you want to work on something, just call it a plan, just call it a project, but not a dream. Dream you can have while you're sleeping, but not while you're working.
Don't judge a book by its cover. Just get to know them. Try to be open. What hurts me the most, to be honest, is looking at how the governments are dealing with this. Some governments are pushing back refugees to the water. Some governments are, taking people to prison because they are crossing illegally. Okay, then find a legal way. No, we are nowhere near being good or okay towards refugees. We have to do way, way more to find a solution for those people to be safe again.
Doesn't matter who you are a white, you are a black, you are a Muslim, you are a Christian. I think that just sport is like this for me and for other athletes also the same. I want to show the people that they don't have confidence, and they say to them, you're like a refugee. I want to say everything that you want, believe in your dreams, and everything is possible.
Being resilient and being hopeful, it does help. Being able to see the light at the end of the tunnel is something that's very good for the mental state.
The International Paralympic Committee announced 6 athletes to represent the refugee Paralympic team at the Tokyo 2020 Paralympic Games, including Burundian refugee Parfait Hakizimana, competing in para taekwondo, and Syrian refugee Alia Issa, competing in para athletics or club throw. UN High Commissioner for Refugees Filippo Grandi says the inclusion of refugee athletes showcases their determination, skill, and ability to inspire.
We're so proud of you. And remember, dear friends, dear athletes, that you have somehow an additional responsibility, not just to do well in the competitions, which is the primary task that you have in Tokyo, but also to represent and make proud millions and millions of refugees and displaced people around the world that will be watching you and feel proud about what you will achieve.
The Tokyo Games begin on the 23rd of July and end on the 8th of August. Biwa Kwan, SBS News.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.